This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
And welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young in today. And we're talking to one of my favorite people to talk to. That's Ira Melman. He's a spokesman for the Federation of American Immigration Reform. And Ira's got a unique finger on the pulse of what's happening in our country regarding immigration control. Ira, great to talk to you again.
Good to be back. Thanks very much.
Yes. Well, I want to start. There's two topics I want to get to, but the first is the Trump announcement regarding paying illegal aliens to self-deport. President Trump had this to say on that topic.
What we thought we'd do is a self-deport, where we're going to pay each one a certain amount of money, and we're going to get them a beautiful flight back to where they came from, and they have a period of time. And if they make it, we're going to work with them so that maybe someday, with a little work, they can come back in if they're good people, if they're the kind of people that we want in our company, industrious people that could love our country. And if they're not, they won't. But it will give them a path to becoming, you know, to coming back into the country. If they miss that limit, they're going to be taken out of our country. And they will never get a path to come back in. And it'll be a much tougher process.
Ira, what do you think about that perspective, or rather that proposal from President Trump?
Well, you know, the proposal sort of sets up a conflict between core principle and expedience. Obviously, you know, with 18.6 million people in this country illegally, we're not going to be able to round everybody up to arrest them, detain them, and deport them formally from the United States. And if you look, you know, even under the accelerated pace of this administration, they say they've only deported about 142,000 people, and a lot of those people were turnarounds at the border. So it's going to take a lot of time and effort. And I think what the president is suggesting here is that we give people some incentive. And, you know, Kristi Noem, the head of the Department of Homeland Security, has said pretty much the same thing on numerous occasions. There's an opportunity for people to go home and still have the possibility of being able to come back, because if we catch you and deport you, you can't come back again to the United States, as the president pointed out. So, you know, it's one of those things that it sort of goes against basic principle. People should obey our laws. We should not need to incentivize or bribe people to obey our laws. But at the same time, you know, the president's looking at this perhaps in a more practical way and saying, you know, if we can get people out of here for $1,000, that's a lot less expensive than going through the formal deportation process. So, you know, you can look at it both ways.
Well, I want to come back to that last point here in a moment. But what I like about this so much, Ira, is that it covers both a carrot and a stick, which we know just from using that as a euphemism for getting people to do something. The carrot is, we'll give you $1,000, put you on a plane and send you where you want to go. And the stick is that if you don't go out this way, we have to deport you the traditional way, you're not going to come back in this country. So do you think that giving both the carrot and the stick in this proposal will increase the number of self-deportations that we're seeing compared to years past?
Yeah, I'm sure that, you know, some people decide that, you know, they're going to take the carrot. Although, you know, when you come to think of it, it's $1,000 that they're offering, you know, given the fact that people have invested, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars in the smugglers to get them here. You know, it may influence a few people. But look, I mean, the objective here is to bring down that number. The administration has gotten the border under control. We are not seeing the masses of people coming across the border and entering the country anymore. The next step is to get the millions and millions of people who don't belong here out of the country. They're doing it through the process of, you know, as we've seen, sending ICE out, finding people. They're starting with the hardened criminals, but they're not excluding other people from deportation. And at the same time, encouraging people to leave on their own. That can be done either with $1,000. It can also be done by making clear that we're going to be policing the employers. You're not going to be able to get a job in this country. There are all sorts of ways to incentivize it. This is just one more. And again, I mean, it's obviously, the president being expedient here, thinking this will hasten the process, but we'll have to wait and see.
We're talking to Ira Mellman. He's the spokesman for the Federation for American Immigration Reform. And Ira, you mentioned it certainly is cheaper for that $1,000. And I've read in multiple sources that it costs $17,000 to deport an individual. So $1,000 is certainly more efficient. But here's, I want to move on to a slightly different topic, but within the same area. And that is this. We were told for 4 years during the Biden administration that we could not control the border without additional congressional action, that Congress had to step in, change the laws of our country, and then and only then could we control our southern border. How has Trump proven that position to be not only mistaken, but intentionally wrong?
Yeah, look, I mean, the President Biden was intentionally misleading the American public. He had all the presidential powers that Donald Trump has. He chose not to use it. He was really holding that border ransom for the kind of legislation that he wanted, which would have given amnesty to millions of people who are here illegally, that would have opened up new pathways for illegal aliens to come into the United States. They did this even without congressional authorization under the Biden administration. It was clear. He always had the authority to control the border, and President Trump proved that within the first month or so of his administration. We have seen the flow come to a trickle. In March, the last month for which there are official numbers, they apprehended 7,181 people at the southern border. That was a slow day under most of the Biden administration, and that was for an entire month. And Tom Homan, his border czar, said, of all the people who they have apprehended coming across the border since President Trump took office, they've only released 9 of them into the United States. So they had all that authority all the time. They chose not to use it. In fact, they refused to use it as leverage to get Congress to pass an amnesty bill that the American public didn't want, and to create just new ways for more and more people to come into the country, despite the fact that it undermined the interest of the American people.
Yeah, you mentioned that amnesty bill and what that would have done. But we had all of the Democrats supporting this bill. There was pressure on then-candidate Trump because he was advising people in Congress to not support this bill. But that would have essentially legalized a certain number of illegal immigrants coming into this country on a regular basis, wouldn't it?
It would. It's like raising the speed limit to 200 miles an hour and taking credit for nobody speeding on the highway anymore. That is essentially what they were proposing. And even the border control measures that were in that bill would have been sunsetted after 3 years. The rest of the provisions would have remained, but after 3 years, all the enforcement measures would have just simply gone away.
Yeah, to me, I am so glad that bill got defeated. We didn't need it. Trump has proven that. And anything else is just disingenuous about the fact that we supposedly needed Congress to act when just enforcing the current laws was all that was needed in order to shut down the southern border. Changing topics here slightly, it was announced today that Trump wants to reopen Alcatraz regarding the a place to house America's most ruthless and violent offenders. President Trump said this.
It represents something very strong, very powerful in terms of law and order. Our country needs law and order. Alcatraz is, I would say, the ultimate, right? Alcatraz, Sing Sing and Alcatraz, the movies. But it's right now a museum, believe it or not. A lot of people go there. It housed the most violent criminals in the world, and nobody ever escaped. One person almost got there, but they, as you know the story, found his clothing rather badly ripped up, and it was a lot of shark bites, a lot of problems. Nobody's ever escaped from Alcatraz, and just represented something strong having to do with law and order. We need law and order in this country.
We do indeed. So, Ira Melman, what are your thoughts on reopening Alcatraz?
Well, you know, he didn't say that he was specifically going to use it to house people who were in the deportation process. But, we do need place to hold people in order to deport people, you know, the people who might not decide to go home on their own. We are going to need temporary places to hold them. They have used, in some cases, Guantanamo. They're using military bases. So we should use all the resources available. And if Alcatraz presents an opportunity, then so be it. But, you know, we are now going through the reconciliation process in Congress to appropriate money for the various departments. And the Department of Justice legislation to fund the Department of Justice includes a lot more money to create spaces to hold people, to detain people while we're in the process of deporting them. So, you know, I'm not sure the American public particularly cares where they're being held. As long as we're able to hold them, get them through the process and remove them from the country, the president has done his job.
Well, the president likes to point out a lot about the MS-13 gang members and the individuals in this country who are committing heinous crimes, terrible crimes. Would, in your perspective, would reopening Alcatraz create any degree of a disincentive for illegal immigrants to commit these heinous crimes that we've read a lot about here in the recent past?
Well, look, I mean, most of the crimes that they've been committing have been committed at the state and local level, and they have to go to state penitentiaries. But clearly, you know, we've had a problem with the previous administration allowing gang members into the United States. You mentioned MS-13. There's also Tren de Aragua. They have been terrorizing communities all across the United States. And one of the first acts that the president did when he came into office was he declared these violent gangs to be terror organizations, and we're getting those people out of the country. So, we need to stop more people from coming in, and he's already checked that box. But at the same time, we also need to be removing these people. He's been using the Alien Enemies Act to get some of these folks out of here. That's tied up in the courts. He just needs to keep pushing against, you know, the forces that don't want us to remove anybody from the country, including violent criminals. We also need to start going after the sanctuary jurisdictions that protect these violent criminals from being removed from the country after they've served their terms. So it's a combination of things, whether it is holding them in a particular place, but it's also going to require that you have cooperation from state and local governments. And again, last week he signed another executive order going after these sanctuary cities and making them feel some pain if they're going to just simply turn these criminal aliens loose into the community and have them reoffend.
Well, Ira, last question. You saw, I believe it was last week, where the judge was arrested for literally hiding an illegal immigrant, instructing that illegal immigrant and his attorney on how to hide and evade capture by ICE officials. Yet the left raised a red herring issue about battling constitutional crisis between branches of government. What do you see about the fact that the FBI and federal officials arrested a sitting judge for her behavior? What are your thoughts?
Oh, and she absolutely deserved it. This was clearly obstruction of justice. Whether she thinks these people should be removed from the country or not is irrelevant. If you have a duly enfranchised law enforcement agency that is sitting outside your courtroom waiting to arrest somebody, you don't usher that guy out the back door to try to help him evade being captured. You know, she's entitled to her opinion every bit as much as the rest of us are. But what no judge is entitled to is to obstruct the actions of a law enforcement department. And that is precisely what she did.
Absolutely. Ira Mellman, spokesman for the Federation for American Immigration Reform. If people want to follow you online or check out your website, how can they find you online?
Best place is to go to the website, which is fairus.org. That's FAIRUS.org, fairus.org.
Very good. Ira, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon here on 97.1 FM Talk.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, we've got some more coming up here in the next segment, including questions about what Jen Psaki knew or didn't know about Biden's cognitive decline. Coming up next here on The Mark Reardon Show, Brad Young in for Mark. Stick around.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building
a life. For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule. And there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Want to grow your business fast? With TikTok ads, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your websites, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTokAds, and grow your business fast.
Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in for Mark today. And really, this segment should be sponsored by Prevagen. Because Prevagen, as anyone who's ever watched Wheel of Fortune knows, alleges that it compensates for cognitive decline.
Oh, is that right?
It does.
I do not get to watch that show.
No, you don't. But,
yeah.
You know, the audience for Wheel of Fortune is, shall we say, an audience of a certain age.
Oh, that's fair.
And it's not millennials, I'll tell you that. So if you look at all the ads on Wheel of Fortune, they're all for cognitive decline, gastrointestinal problems, bad knees, bad hips. I mean, you can tell the audience that they're trying to reach. but it should be sponsored by Prevagen, because Jen Psaki, former White House press secretary for Joe Biden, came out this week. And Ethan, we're going to go with clip number 13. This is what she had to say about Biden's cognitive decline.
I think cover up is such a loaded phrase. But I also, to your point, I left in May of 2022, just for the facts here. And I have seen Biden once since then. So I hadn't seen him in person during that period of time. I never saw that person, not a single time. And I was in the Oval Office every day that was on that debate stage. I'm not a doctor. Aging happens quite quickly. Well, this is what I mean about cover up is a very loaded term, I think.
Well, it means you knew that it was really bad and you're pretending otherwise versus you're deluding yourself.
I think it's a bit of a dangerous term.
What do you think about that? I mean, we saw, I think even going back to the first 2 years of the Biden term, the way he was handled, the way that he was never allowed to talk to reporters.
True.
Isn't there evidence even during Jen Psaki's term as the White House press secretary that showed that President Biden had some severe cognitive limitations?
Well, I think probably so. And I think she's probably deluding herself. But it's hard to say if we weren't there. The other thing is, you wonder, since he never took questions, whether that was because of a decline or whether that was a strategy to begin with, saying we're just going to, you know, not touch the media.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. It could have been a strategy. And talking about strategies, if you remember when Biden was running for president, there was the joke that he never came out of his basement because of COVID. But he didn't. I mean, he was severely limited, which I think was an advantage for Biden because he wasn't doing rallies. He wasn't doing press conferences. He wasn't doing anything that required unscripted interaction with either the public or members of the media. And so he could be elected in a way, because of COVID, he could be elected in a way that no other president would have been allowed to have been elected because of COVID.
That's true, too. And maybe her standard was just what she saw at the beginning, which just became normal. Who knows?
True. She doesn't know. But if you even look at the last 2 years of the Biden administration, oof, which, again, Jen Psaki's credit, she was not there every day. But those last 2 years, I mean, what we saw, what every human being who saw that debate, to this day, I just can't believe that was a one-off.
I know. And I can't believe she thinks that either, but maybe that's her excuse. I was only in there for the first two.
Well, that's a good way to dodge it. Mm-hmm. I had a political science professor when I was in Carbondale for undergrad, and he liked to talk about that he was the national polling advisor for President Nixon. David Durge. He worked in the White House before he came to Carbondale to be a political science professor, and he was in charge of, number one, polling on all issues, and number two, he met daily with the president to advise the president on polling numbers. So he had a daily meeting with President Nixon, but he always liked to say, I was out before Watergate. Okay, so that's why he could distance himself
right
from Nixon a little bit by saying, hey, I was gone before Watergate, right? And so I hear a little bit of that here with Jen Psaki. Hey, I was out before the big cognitive decline.
Right.
But when you look at reporters as varied as Chuck Todd, as Axios's Alex Thompson, who spoke at the recent press dinner, the White House press dinner, and CBS's Jan Crawford, all of those acknowledged that Biden's cognitive decline was known by everyone. All three have said that.
Yes.
And Chuck Todd said something that I think was extremely insightful when he said, we, meaning the media, did not cover his cognitive decline because we were afraid that in doing so, we would indirectly be helping President Trump.
Well, there you go. It's outrageous. They completely give up all journalistic integrity to protect someone, which is not at all the purpose of journalism. And then they say, this is what happened. It's shocking.
It is shocking. And if you ask other reporters who still have their jobs, of course, they would never admit to that.
No.
Chuck Todd only said it because he's out from NBC. Right?
That's exactly right.
So he had the freedom to say that. But to me, it's unconscionable that the press would be an active participant in politics and choosing what to report and what not to report in order to affect the outcome of the election.
As appalling as that is, it may have done Republicans a favor. by keeping Biden in the I'm going to still run position all the way as far as he did. And then to have Kamala Harris come in and start spitting out word salads that no one could understand.
Right.
So maybe that was an upside. I don't know.
I think you're right, Sue, because I'm convinced of this, that if the Democrats would have had an actual primary and not a selection process where they selected Kamala Harris as the candidate, if they would have had an actual primary, she would not have been the nominee.
I don't think so either.
I mean, she did very poorly in 2020. She was the first candidate to drop out of the 2020 race in the primary because she was shellacked by the other candidates. And had they had an actual primary, she probably wouldn't have been the candidate. And at that point, I mean, I still think President Trump would have won that election, but it wouldn't have been by the landslide proportions that we saw in reality.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We'll just have to see. I just think it's going to come back and bite you. You cannot do the wrong thing and continuously do that and then not have it come back to bite you.
Yeah. Well, as the Clintons proved over and over and over again.
Unless your last name is Clinton.
Well, yeah. But the cover up is oftentimes worse than the crime itself.
Yes.
And that certainly even applies to Nixon. The cover up that Nixon did, he didn't knowingly commit the Watergate break-in. That was done by people who worked for Nixon. But by covering it up, it made him responsible for the actions that those who worked for him did.
Yeah.
And so I look at it that way, and I apply that to this situation. And I say, well, if the media was actively working for Biden, which Chuck Todd admitted they were, right?
Yeah.
Then the cover up that those who were working for the Biden administration did, the cover up, to me, applies to the president and certainly to the White House and to his campaign team by covering up the fact that Biden was not fit to be president.
And then when Kamala is there as a candidate, they tried to cover for her as well. Remember the CBS interview where they finally had to release the full one because we know they hacked it up to try to make her look better. And that didn't work either. So imagine how poor it has to be, as she has to be as a candidate, for even all their efforts to try to cover it not to work.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Sue, because in my stack of stuff to talk about today, I actually had this story, which to me, it exemplifies how the media sticks together to advance their ideological purpose. And here's my example. You know, that CBS story that we're talking about, where Kamala was interviewed and CBS hacked it up, edited it to take out all the word salad stuff and to present the best face forward for Kamala Harris. That interview and that editing was nominated for an Emmy. At the end of last week. It was nominated. Now, it hasn't won yet, but it was the fact that it was nominated.
But it was nominated.
And the category is, quote, outstanding edited interview, unquote.
I can't.
So the Emmy process, I mean, it's...
hey, to be fair, it was pretty well edited.
Yes, it was pretty well edited.
Oh, my gosh.
But the fact that it was nominated for an Emmy...
That is shocking.
...shows you that they were all in favor of doing that. In other words, we'll do anything to stop Donald Trump.
Ethan and I have discussed this, the fact that I think at least part of the election, well, this election was partially saved by podcasting and long-form interviews where the media has nothing to do with it. It's just President Trump and Joe Rogan sitting down, or RFK Jr. and a podcaster sitting down, and you can actually listen to them as a person, not in a 3 or 4 second soundbite that's been manipulated by a left-leaning media, and you can listen to what that person actually says. And I think that made a huge difference.
You're exactly right. One of the shows that I record, because I'm at church Sunday morning, but one of the shows that I record is on NBC, Face the Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, not Face the Nation, what's the NBC version of Face the Nation?
I don't know.
I'm just now drawing
Meet
a blank.
Meet the Press?
Meet the Press, sorry. My apologies. Face the Nation, CBS. Meet the Press on NBC. I record it every week. And when my wife and I sat down and watched it yesterday, it was a basically it was an expanded show. And the entire show was Kristen Welker sitting down with Donald Trump. And he said some things. And also they made the entire interview available that you could watch it on NBC.com. So I thought that was to their credit because some editing has to happen. But if you release everything, then it's completely transparent, right?
Right.
And what, Ethan, you got a clip from that?
I was going to say we have quite a few clips from it if there's anything that you want played.
Sure.
18 through 27 are all from that. So, you know, well, you got your pick of the litter there, buddy.
I do have my pick of the litter, and I'll get to that in a moment. But my point is on the topic that we're talking about, which is sitting down with the press in an unedited fashion. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump gave some of the answers yesterday that I didn't think were particularly good answers. And my wife told me to stop doing this, but I kept pausing the show and then saying how Donald Trump should have answered that question. She goes, okay, Brad, that's enough. Let's hear what he has to say. So, which is not uncommon in my household, by the way. But what to me, what was impressive about it is Trump had no notes.
Yep.
He had no handlers in the interview. It was just him and Kristen Welker, and Kristen had a clipboard with lots of notes. That's fine. That's what you have to do an interview. But Trump was just talking.
Yep.
And I thought, even if you disagree with the way he answers some of the questions, which I did, I would have answered them differently. But the fact that he did it shows, I'm not afraid to talk to you.
Correct.
And we never saw that in 4 years of the Biden administration.
Never.
We saw him handled. We saw him coddled. We saw him covered. We saw him scripted. But we never saw him talk off the top of his head, answering questions and dealing with issues. Never, not once in 4 years, even 2 years of the Jen Psaki time that she
it's
was
true.
The White House press spokesman.
That's true. And as a result, you don't know. And that kind of leads you to the Kamala Harris campaign, which was about nothing. No one understood. She was unable to speak on any topic saying, here's my plan, except in round word salads. There was really no solution.
Exactly. And Ethan, why don't you play clip number 27? Because I was impressed with NBC that even in their editing of the interview, they left this in. This is clip number 27.
Prices are already going up on some popular items, tires, strollers.
This is such a dishonest interview already. Prices are down on groceries. Prices are down for oil. Prices are down for all energy. Prices are down at tremendous numbers. We have it down at $1.98 in numerous places. But when you say costs are going up, even mortgage rates are going down.
So I gave credit, number one, to NBC for leaving that in. They could have edited that out, but they didn't. They left it in. I also give Kristen Welker and NBC a big credit here for just allowing the president to talk. And they did it, and I was very proud of them for doing that.
I agree with what you say, but I think they left that in because they think that's an example of him lying.
Really?
You know how she postulates, she says first, well, everything's on up, 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 up. And then he says, no, actually it isn't. I think half of the people think, oh, see, she's right and he's just lying. But that's only my theory. But you're right, they should get credit for at least leaving stuff in.
And I'll say this, I think it's refreshing to have that. And sure, I'll give them credit. But really, more so, what I'm saying in my mind is, finally, you're doing it the way it should be done, rather than, oh, well done, you did it without bias or with a limited amount of bias,
right?
You did it how it should actually be done,
yes.
Which is a little more of what I'm thinking.
Yes, and the White House had to even for the Biden administration, the White House had to go so far as to even creating a fake studio in the White House for TV interviews that made it look like he was in some sort of a presidential section of the White House. It was all fake. I saw behind the scenes of it. It was all fake and manufactured. And here Trump is just sitting down chair to chair with Kristen Welker. I really thought it was a great interview.
At what point do you think they would have pulled Biden? I mean, it takes, a star to actually say, yeah, I don't think he's the person he once was. George Clooney has to write an op-ed. It has to say something before anything goes. Do you think the plan all along was to just run him and then have whoever was controlling him control him for another four?
No, I think the plan was this. I think the plan was prop him up, shield him as much as possible from scrutiny or letting anyone see that he was cognitively not capable to do the job. Get him elected because he beat Trump once. He can probably beat Trump again. And then when he gets reelected, he serves for a month and then resigns and says, you know, for health issues, I need to step away. And then that puts Kamala Harris into the president's seat. I think that was the plan all along.
That
but it took
sense.
It took the debate, because the debate wasn't coddled and shielded and scripted and edited. The debate was there for everyone to see. And when that debate happened, then the secret was out. The toothpaste was out of the toothpaste tube and couldn't be shoved back in. And that being the toothpaste of cognitive decline, it was out for everyone to see. It couldn't be put back in the bottle. And they had to act, but only because of that debate.
Man, and that still took time.
And that took time. And just think, if he would have won, we would have had President Kamala Harris by today.
Oh, that is
3 months in, probably would have had President Kamala Harris. Our border would still be porous. There would be no cutting of any of the inefficiency in government.
More spending.
In fact, it would have been increased spending, increased debt load. All the student loans would be forgiven.
Oh, my God.
It would have been challenged all over again up to the Supreme Court. It would have been mayhem. And so for all those who think that the first 100 days of the Trump administration have been nothing but mayhem, I like to point out, you know, there's a lot of positions that Trump takes that I don't agree with, but it would have been far worse had we had President Kamala Harris.
Good grief.
Oh, my goodness.
She was the border czar for... Let's not forget.
She was the border czar. Exactly, Sue. Well put. Hey, we got to take a break here before they come in with a great big hook and pull me away from the microphone. So we've got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk in the last segment. We'll have the audio cut of the day. Brad Young, sitting in for Mark Reardon, 97.1.
On my podcast, Aspire With Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire With Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
On FM Talk. Welcome to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young here on the last segment. My goodness, where are the last 3 hours gone? I wanted to see if you guys had seen this story before we get to the audio cut of the day, and that is there was a biological swimmer, Anne Caldas, who dominated in the women's races at the U.S. Masters Swimming Spring National Championship in Texas.
You said a biological swimmer?
Yeah, biological male.
There we go.
Sorry, my apologies.
Gotcha.
A biological male swimmer. He won all five races that he entered in the women's division, and he also every race that he entered in the 45 year to 49-year-old category, he won every single one of them, and not even by a small margin.
Uh-huh.
It looked like he had a motorboat behind him, and the women were all in eating his bubbles.
It's almost as though that's why Title IX was created.
You think? Wow.
Huh.
That's exactly why Title IX was created.
Huh.
And as you guys have heard me say this before, my oldest daughter was a beneficiary of Title IX. She got a 4-year rowing scholarship.
That's
she,
awesome.
She went to KU. Unfortunately, my wife's as a Mizzou grad didn't like the fact that she was going to KU. But since it was a 4-year ride, full ride,
see ya.
They said, you know,
take it,
enjoy it, have fun there in Lawrence. But that was designed so that women would not be shut out of sports.
Correct.
And they could compete on a level playing field.
That's right.
And the fact that this biologically male swimmer won every single race he competed in by enormous amounts is a shock, should be a shock to no one.
And is he or she, whatever he goes by now, proud? Are you to... have that huge of a biological advantage.
Correct.
And then win everything. Is that fun?
I guess it is.
It's so completely unfair that I just lose myself in that. I don't understand.
I know. And what's interesting is I looked up the U.S. Masters Swimming. What is their policy on transgender swimming? So I looked that up. And the organization's eligibility requirements do allow for transgender athletes provided that, and here's the quote from that I got from their policy on their website, provided that, quote, hormonal therapy appropriate for the female gender has been administered continuously and uninterrupted in a verifiable manner for a sufficient length of time, no less than 1 year, to minimize gender-related advantages in sports competitions, unquote.
You'll notice that they have to say minimize because it doesn't eliminate anything.
It can't eliminate it.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I'm always wondering, why don't we see any women who are transitioning to males winning in those categories?
Mm-hmm.
Because it isn't putting down women. It's stating that that's the point of Title IX.
Correct.
And by supporting Title IX, you support women. And by supporting transgender athletes competing, you're essentially saying I'm anti-woman.
Essentially.
That's what you're saying. And to me, it's outrageous. I want to change topics for a second because I only got a few minutes left. And we heard, we talked about Amazon, listen to me, Alcatraz. some people who work at Amazon think it's Alcatraz, but no, it's not. But this is what Eric Schmidt, our own senator from Missouri, this is what he said about reopening Alcatraz.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
This is what the Democrats, they lose their mind because of Trump derangement syndrome, but why President Trump has been so effective. Alcatraz means something, right? And so when you have a law and order president, you're dealing with two tracks here. One is punishment. People ought to be punished for the crimes they've committed. And also deterrence. It works in foreign policy. It has worked now with our border. People know if they try to come here legally, they're not getting in. They're going to be turned away. So if you're the worst of the worst, if you're a criminal who's coming here illegally, the idea of being on an island in Alcatraz is a deterrent. And that's exactly what President Trump is doing. He's saying we need more space, and there ought to be a space dedicated for the people who are the worst among us who've come here illegally and have committed crimes.
What do you think about should we be reopening Alcatraz? Is it a good idea? Eric Schmidt makes some good points about deterrence.
He does.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I have no idea. The condition of it, I don't know anything about it. So I'm not against the idea.
Yeah, I just can't. As soon as I heard this story coming out, I couldn't help but listen, or rather think about that. It's a fantastic Clint Eastwood movie called Escape from Alcatraz.
Yep.
And I love that movie. I've watched it, I don't know how many dozen times. And it's an excellent movie, but it shows, even then in the 60s, that Alcatraz was a scary place.
Oh yeah,
it was not pretty. It was not there was not carpeted floors and watching TV or having those privileges. It was a nasty place, and that would certainly create the incentive that we need, hopefully, to reduce crime. Brad Young sitting in here for Mark Reardon. Mike Elam will be in tomorrow. I'll be back on Wednesday. Stick around on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.